Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. Sorry about that, we were still talking amongst ourselves, but it's nice to be back. I'm Joe Rimmer, joined today by Tom Cavilla, and it's been what, over a week, I think, since we've done our last podcast. Obviously, the Christmas period, our staff here, there and everywhere, taking days off, going around the country to football matches, a lot going on. So apologies for not being with you, but we are back and we'll be ploughing ahead in the next few weeks and things are getting exciting. So, Tom, how are you? Good Christmas?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Yeah, yes. Any nice presents?
3 points.
3 points.
Boxing Day, yeah.
That all you wanted for Christmas?
Yeah. Better VAR decisions, but I didn't get that one.
No. I got a Velvetizer from Hotel Chocolat, which I recommend to any of our listeners. Very good. If you've never had a Velvetized hot chocolate, Tom, you'll never go back. You'll never go back. But yeah, we didn't come here to talk about chocolate. We came here to talk about Liverpool. And it's been a decent week. I think it worked out well in the end. We haven't really been on the pod since the Arsenal game, so I think we'd start there.
Yeah.
But before we do, I did say I'd forget to remind people, but our producer is going to be sending us questions throughout. So if you are watching or listening and want to send us a question, leave one in the comments, and Ian will pop it over to me, and Tom and I will have a chat about it during the pod. But yeah, we'll start with the Arsenal game, Tom. On the 23rd, it was slightly disappointing in the end, I think it's fair to say. I was hopeful and quite positive going in, and that Liverpool could win the game. I remember on the pod beforehand saying Hart said 2-1, Head said 1-1, and 1-1 it was. First of all, just what did you make of it? Big missed opportunity for Liverpool. What did you make of Arsenal?
I think it was quite an even game, wasn't it? I think in the end, a draw was probably just about the right result.
Yeah.
Although we'll probably come on to the big talking point in terms of the Odegaard handball, which wasn't given. I mean, if that's given and Liverpool go 1-0 up, it's a different game.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously that happened after the Arsenal goal anyway, so it would have been 1-0. But yeah, it could change the game if that happens. Liverpool score, then you get all the momentum from that. And I think it was unfortunate. I think if you look at it, I'm a bit confused as to how it wasn't given as a penalty. And Liverpool players and Klopp obviously will be very frustrated about that, because they could well have gone on to win. But Liverpool, you know, they created a few more chances after that, get the goal back, which was a really good goal, obviously, from Salah. Trent's pass for the goal was amazing. But, you know, it was very even after that. Arsenal didn't really create too much in the second half, and, you know, they sort of lost their way a little bit after half time, and Liverpool had a few chances to score, but just couldn't take it. And I think a point was probably about right, to be honest.
Yeah, I think a point was about right. I'm becoming more and more impressed with Arsenal as I watch them. I know they obviously dropped points in the week, and we'll come on to that. But they look a stronger outfit than they did last season in terms of, I don't mean like overall, I mean sort of physically stronger and mentally stronger. But I thought it was a missed opportunity for Liverpool. That Trent chance will be, you know, I hope it doesn't go down as one of the big missed opportunities of the season. But you look at that chance and just, you know, it just flowed, didn't it? And I think he just hit it too hard. It was just one of them where a little bit of a cooler head was needed. agree with you about Odegaard. I mean, not sure how that isn't a handball. I suppose by the letter of the law, I know why it's not, because he didn't deliberately handle it, or certainly you can't prove that he deliberately handled it. But that's why I think the handball rule is really difficult to sort of get your head around, because if we did go back to deliberate handballs, well, how would you ever prove in 99% of cases that it was deliberate? I mean, Odegaard will forever say, and I probably would just about believe him, that he slipped and his hand falls down and touches the ball. But then again, you know, I think, you know, it prevents a big chance for Liverpool. It was pretty clumsy. My frustration with VAR, look, we're going to talk about VAR quite a bit throughout this because I've got it written down a couple of times and it comes up almost every game, is why do they suddenly get involved for some things but stay out of it for others? And there's this thing, they don't want to re-referee the game, but they seem in some circumstances quite happy to involve themselves. I mean, the goals of Burnley will come on to, but that was an incident where I thought, why aren't you sending the referee to go and have a look at that and go and be sure?
Well, if they gave that as a penalty as well,
yeah,
it wouldn't have got overturned because they wouldn't say it's clear and obvious error.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes the referees are relying on having that as like a fallback option of like, oh, if I give this, it might be wrong, but they can just chalk it off.
Yeah.
But I think he didn't want to. I don't know why he didn't give it, because like I said, if he gave it, then it would have been given, it would have stood. Yeah. So that's the problem. If they don't give it originally, you then don't get the chance for it. So yeah, I think we're seeing that quite a lot of referees kind of relying on VAR to sort of get them out of trouble or make the decision for them sometimes where they're not quite sure. I think that they're just going into it, I'll give it because we've got the VAR to kind of have a look at it for me.
Yeah, or like you say, I'll not give it because hopefully VAR will intervene, but we're seeing it just seems to be inconsistent when they intervene and when they don't intervene. And look, we'll talk more widely about VAR because I know you've got opinions on it, but I think that's the problem with it. It creates these situations where we want it to intervene sometimes, we don't want it to intervene others, and it just creates an extra layer of difficulty for referees, of frustration for fans. And it was a frustrating moment of that game. And I think without VAR, you would probably be more, and look, we go back and fans have moaned from the very first existence of football, but you know, I think you'd be more willing to accept that handball as something that could be missed within the flow of the game if VAR wasn't there. So it that was a frustrating one. But on the whole, I think with Liverpool, I just think you'd see where they're not quite at the levels they've been at the past, because there's a bit of an excitement about them, I think, at times. I think they get a bit carried away. I think they're not got the cool sort of dead-eye composure that the best teams at City we've seen have in recent years. And I think in that Arsenal game, had they just been a bit more cool and a little bit more composed in the second half, they should and could have won that game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, as you say, a 1-1 draw was probably a fair result. And a missed opportunity, and a missed weak opportunity really for Liverpool with that and the Man United game, I think we'd say. But this title race is showing those twists and turns, isn't it, throughout? And they go to Burnley, they win 2-0. I mean, it was quite a stressful game because Liverpool go a goal up, look like they're going to go 2-3-4 up within the first 20 minutes, half an hour. And when they don't get that second goal, I don't know about you, Tom, but I'm sitting there thinking, oh, here we go. They're barely going to get a scrappy one and we're going to draw this game and be so frustrated. But they did finally get the second. But again, more VAR nonsense within that game. What did you make of it?
Well, just on Burnley, I get what you were saying about being nervous at 1-0. I think it did feel like that for a while, but they didn't really look like doing anything, Burnley, most of the game. It was just whenever they got forward, they just kind of ran out of ideas when they got down the line. And I thought they were quite poor, actually, on the night. And
they're naive team.
Yeah.
They're very naive.
I mean, they looked pretty much nailed on to go down them and Sheffield United, you'd say. I don't know. When you used to go to Burnley, it always used to be such a tough game that you're dreading going there. But I don't think they've really got that fear factor anymore of going there. And Company's obviously trying to play that style of football, which is, you know, exciting to watch, which Burnley never used to do. But I guess it's not really working out too well at the minute. The the disallowed goals, just going on to that, I think particularly the one involving Nunes, the foul, I couldn't believe that got taken away. It was, if you watch it back, it barely makes contact on him at all. And he goes down, obviously, as most players do in that situation. But he's not even appealing for a foul after that happens. Yeah. He's got his hands on his head thinking, we've gone goal down. And couldn't believe that got ruled out, to be honest. And the second one's a bit more debatable in terms of, is he blocking the goalie's view? I mean, we've seen one that City got away with this season for a similar thing at the Etihad, where had a player stood like that in a position similar to Elliot, was it?
Yeah.
And it got given. So again, is the question of why is that one given? Why is this one? Trafford seemed to be moving away from the ball anyway as the shot happened. And I think that one's always a bit of a tough one in terms of, is he actually blocking the goalie's view or not? And that's the only one I can kind of sympathise a bit more, because it's quite subjective. Whereas others, like the handball, it's quite clear when the player's deliberately done it. Whereas that, it's not quite as clear, I think, that one.
I take the opposite view to you with those two incidents. Like the first one, I kind of think I'm glad they didn't intervene in that circumstance. Because, you know, look, looking back and watching it again and again, I don't think it's a foul, but ultimately that is a referee judgment call. It's fast. It's the sort of thing in the past that you would see ruled out, and you would, I'm not saying you'd be okay with it, but I think Caspier de Grel says, I've missed you guys and girls. I mean, there's no girls here, but yeah, I appreciate that. Missed you too, Caspier. I thought that was one that I can kind of accept, but what I can't accept is then VAR then intervenes for the second goal, which I thought it's a whole confusing situation. Does Salah get a shove? Yeah, he probably does. Well, he definitely does. And shoved into an offside position. Is he interfering with play? Well, I would say that goalkeeper was never getting near Elliot's finish. It was low. It was in the bottom corner. He was never getting down to it. Why VAR for the first one goes, okay, we don't think there's enough there for us to get involved and say, go and have a look whether that was a foul. You know, I'm fine with that they don't do that, but then don't do it for the second one.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why they do that. I don't blame referees. I don't believe in these things like, we want consistency. That's never been a thing. You know, consistency in football has never existed between referees, and, you know, they're human beings, and human beings don't, you're not consistent in anything really you do in those types of circumstances. So I don't believe in that, and I don't believe in refereeing standards and all that sort of thing. But what I do believe is that VAR has added an extra layer of it just makes their lives harder. Because if you're on VAR, yeah, you probably think, should I get involved in this one? And they obviously did with that, because they think, well, offside's a bit more clear cut, and Salah was clearly offside. But they didn't look at the other reasons around it, which was the shove, which was the fact that the keeper probably wasn't never going to get there. So it's just, I mean, I'd say I'm sick of talking about this, but it's kind of a fun talking point. You know, I always think people say, oh, sick of talking about referees, but, you know, everyone always thought about referees. But at the same time, it's just, I don't know, every game, it doesn't really matter who's better. I mean, those decisions didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. Liverpool won the game 2-0. They're fine. You know, they came through it, but they were the main things we were talking about after Liverpool beat Burnley. And that I suppose is more the frustration. A couple of questions for our listeners before we continue. Rod Meta says, twist, what could it be? Well, it's the title race, Rod. I mean, twists every time, you know, I watched that Arsenal game, Arsenal West Ham, and we'll come on to it in a minute, but first 20 minutes I thought Arsenal were going to wipe the floor with West Ham, and West Ham went and won. And Paul Hexham wants to know, how many apologies will Liverpool get from the PGMOL? Well, I don't think that many, because they'd be apologising to everyone all the time, wouldn't they? So, some performances to take from that Burnley game. First of all, Darwin Nunes, a much, much needed goal and a great finish. But yeah, that was much needed, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think the funny thing with him is it always seems to be he scores the hardest goals possible. and then will miss from 2 yards.
Yeah, absolutely.
That just seems to be the way with him. He scored that goal at Bournemouth in the Carabao Cup, which was another sort of ridiculous goal from outside the box in the top corner. And then you see him have a chance, like a one-on-one. He'll hit the bar, he'll put it over the bar. So he just needs to work on taking the easy chances, really. If he did that, he'd be well into double figures for goals. So I think that's just the frustrating thing with him. He can do it. It's just, why not take the easy ones that Salah, will take 99% of the time? I think that's just the difference between him and, someone like Salah at the minute. He's not that ruthless striker that we see.
That ruthlessness, that comes back to what I meant a bit against Arsenal. It's like, I think there's too much of that in the Liverpool team at the moment to take them that one step further. I think if Nunes had a bit more of that ruthlessness, we'd see a better player and and the team take the team to new heights. But like, I just think my issue with him is he doesn't have enough influence on games consistently. We seem to go through a 6-game spell where we go, wow, Darwin Nunes. Yeah. And then 6 games where you're frustrated with him. And, again, the United game is another example of I just think the forward line not being influential enough when you really needed them. But sorry, go on, Tom.
But he's still having the problems with the offsides. He was offside 2 or 3 times in both games. I think him and Alanga, the two most offside players in the league this season, I think it's 16 each. They've been offside.
And it's not even like ones where he's just gone a bit too early. It's so many times I think he should be looking across the line and getting himself back onside. He just seems to be daydreaming and that or just not switched on. So that is hugely frustrating. But go on, sorry.
So that's something, he needs to work on that. I think that's actually more annoying than the actual finishing problem, because that's something you'd work on in training or should know as a player by his age, when to run, when not to run. But he just seems to be just always in the wrong place, or when he'll get the ball, it's not quite sure what to do with it. And it's very clunky at times. It's not very easy on the eye watching him. That's fine, but as long as you score, but he's not been scoring either. So I think if you compare him with Jota, it's, the complete opposite. He'll come on and take one chance and score. And that's the difference. I think Jota's the best finisher apart from Salah, obviously, at the club.
Yeah, see, I think Jota, quite often, I think he gets lost in games a little bit, but like you say, he's more influential in the final third. And it was great to see him back, wasn't it? And scoring. And I think Liverpool have massively missed him, especially in those games against Arsenal and Man United, where you just need something a little bit different, where you know that the ball is going to be in the opposition box a fair bit. And, the United game especially, they were taking a lot of shots from distance when you thought if they just, work it in a bit more. But without someone like Jota, they're not taking those types of chances. So, I think it's massive. And again, I go back to, I think the rest of the Premier League are underestimating the injuries Liverpool have had this season. They've had some really, really bad injuries. And you look at the state of the squad now, no left backs now, with two pretty freak injuries there. A centre half who is out for the season, who would be playing probably the majority of games. And that has knock-on effect, because Joe Gomez, who's been playing in right back and centre back, is now going to have to play at left back for a spell.
Jota, still had James Milner.
Yeah, but
could have
Jota,
played him everywhere.
Midfielders going down, two of which have not played all season. And then now we're going to have two players going off to different cup competitions. So, I look at teams like Arsenal, who, they've had injuries here and there, but they've not been hit anywhere near as hard. And that's probably the most impressive thing for me about Liverpool this season, is they've managed to only be beaten once in a very controversial game and stay in touch, and or not just stay in touch, put themselves top.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
But it's a weird season, isn't it? Because I feel like the first half of it, every team you look at them, every set of supporters will be looking, thinking we should be further ahead or we should be more in touch. I look at Liverpool and think so many missed opportunities, and I worry that they'll pay for them. But sorry, going back to the Burnley game, I wanted to chat to you about Endo and Salah. I thought Endo, again, was superb. He's really growing into life at Liverpool, and I'm hoping, and this Asia Cup isn't a great thing for him in terms of this, but I'm hoping with what we're seeing with him is just that spell that that the players have had at Liverpool adjusting to the pace, to the style, to the system, you know, to being a defensive midfielder who has to patrol an area of the pitch pretty much alone, you know. So I think it's been quite impressive to see him get to grips. You know, there were times early in the season, especially in the Europa League, I really like the way he passed the ball. He fizzes it forward with a lot of purpose. He's good in the air, especially for his size. He's got a good leap on him. He's quite influential there. But he felt like he was picking up bookings and just was like a second slow. You reminded me a little bit of Lucas. You know, I used to like Lucas a lot, but what was probably stopping him from being the next level was just that little bit of quickness across a couple of yards and just reading the game maybe a slight bit earlier. But we're seeing him come to terms with that, and he's become a really influential player for them, hasn't he, over the last month or so?
Yeah, it's bad timing for him this coming up when he's in such a good run and playing every game, which he wasn't obviously earlier in the season. So, you know, he's taking his chance in the team. You just worry a little bit when he comes back, whether he'll get straight back in or not. With McAllister now coming back, it will be interesting to see what Klopp does in terms of that when he comes back, and if he goes straight back in or has to try and work his way back into the team again, like he has done before this. So, I mean, Liverpool want him back as soon as possible anyway, because it's just another option to have. And when you've got all these games coming up, so, I mean, it's pleasing for him that he's been playing well. You know, Liverpool needed someone to kind of take control of that position, really, because they tried a few people there, and McAllister looks good at times, not so good at other times, and I'm sure McAllister doesn't really want to play in that position anyway. So if Endo continues playing there, it does free up the other option of just having McAllister in just in midfield to the side of him on the left or the right, or Szoboszlai as well. So yeah, it just gives Liverpool another option in that part of the pitch. And the fact that he's doing so well, it does raise the question whether Liverpool will look to sign someone else in that area. That's obviously been a position that been a lot of talk about, potentially signing someone, Andre or Joel Polinia. So yeah, I mean, I can't see Klopp bringing someone else in if he rates Endo so highly, which he clearly does. He obviously sees him as that person to fix that position and be the main player, which I don't think many people really saw him as when he was signed. It was kind of seen as more of a stopgap signing. Or,
well, I'd intervene and just say that whatever happens, he's not long term, is he?
He's 30.
He's the wrong size of 30. Yeah. So I think, you know, even if Klopp does see him as the immediate future, you know, Andre, who's what, 22? 22?
Yeah.
You know, surely. And as well, if you take into account that a lot of these players in this position especially seem to need the adjustment period, then why not sign someone sooner rather than later who can adjust and get some game time whilst Endo is in and out, and also whilst the rest of the midfield is in a bit of a state of flux, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see Liverpool do that, but I'm not sure whether they will.
No, I agree. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a good surprised if they do, but I don't know, just from Klopp's comments and what we've seen in the past in January, they seem to be very reluctant to do anything big unless it's absolutely necessary to the team.
Yeah, or whether they find a deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Liverpool, and again, I've got transfers written down, so we'll come to it in a bit more detail later on, but Liverpool seem to take opportunities in January, don't they? The Cody Gakpo thing, you know, it was probably not a deal that they were going to do in January,
yeah,
or that they even needed to do last January, but they obviously saw a chance to do it. Zach Emerson on Facebook's asked, do you think Salah is more unselfish in front of goal this year compared to previous years? It's a good question, because I don't think I've detected it, but I don't think he's more unselfish in front of goal, but I think he is more of a team man,
yeah,
in terms of a leadership role, in terms of... He seems to be a bit more involved rather than just being sort of... I don't know. It's hard to answer. It's a good question, because I don't think I've seen times where I thought, oh, well, Salah could have shot there and he's passed, because he's just not that sort of player. But he does seem more involved in the Liverpool process overall. And I think I wouldn't be surprised. And the things you hear is he's more influential perhaps behind the scenes. And I wonder whether that's a role that he's now growing into in the team. And again, I wonder whether that's a way of Liverpool saying to him, look, you're important. Saudi are going to come knocking again, maybe next summer. You can go and be someone in Saudi, or you can be an influential Liverpool player all round, in the way that Van Dijk is, you know, behind the scenes as well. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I think he's been definitely guilty of that in the past. Like when Firmino and Mane were up front of him, he definitely, there were times where you think you need to pass that, and he would just try and take the shot on. My only thing with him is, I think the assists sort of speak for themselves in terms of he is more of a team player. But the one thing I don't like from him in terms of a selfish point of view is that reaction we see sometimes when he gets subbed off, and it's almost like, you can't take me off. It's throwing a bit of a strop. I think he did it the first game of this season at Chelsea, yeah, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
He's done it a few times before, and I just don't like that. It kind of reminds me a bit of Ronaldo, arrogance and of I'm too good to be taken off. So, yeah, I don't like that. I find that a bit annoying, to be honest. So I hope he stops doing that, because it's quite frustrating to see that.
But if you hear other players talk about him, he seems to be a bit more of a voice, perhaps around the training ground, you know, perhaps with some of the younger players. I mean, I've always got the feeling that, you know, well, not the feeling, you know, that they say he's first in, last out the gym. You know, he's often putting in extra work. But I think perhaps in the past, where he's been a bit more solitary, now he's sort of passing on advice. Now he's taking youngsters to one side, taking other players. So I think we're seeing a more unselfish Salah as perhaps a person,
yeah,
rather than maybe just on the pitch. Rob Mehta has thanked us for clarifying the twist. I mean, I think there's been lots of twists and turns in this title race so far, Rob. I mean, the fact that it's in capital letters, it's just YouTube loves capital letters. You like us when we shout things at you, so I'll shout twist. But there was a twist, because we've talked Endo Salah. So the next twist was the West Ham game. Did you watch the Arsenal West Ham game, Tom?
I only saw some of it because I had football on pretty much every day over Christmas. Same, so I was told I couldn't have it on another night. But I saw some of it first half.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it, and then I turned over and watched Saltburn. Overrated. I thought Arsenal were going to wipe the floor with West Ham. They had a lot of the ball. They were probing and passing. Odegaard looked good, playing little balls through. Saka was getting on the end of them. And I suppose they had that one of those days that I feel like we've watched Liverpool have so many times, where a team gets one chance, scores, and then you just know that you're not going to find a way through. And West Ham, who I think David Moyes, football genius, I think he's done an incredible job there, to be fair. I think he's created a really good team. I really like Bowen. You know, I'd love him at Liverpool in a heartbeat. I said to you before tonight, Tom, that I think Suchek's the sort of player that would go to most other clubs and not really be very good. But at West Ham, he seems to have a really influential role. Love Paqueta. I know he went off injured, but I think he's got great ability. And they seem quite solid. So West Ham just did a number on them, didn't they? And I suppose, Tom, it just sort of shows how odd this season's been. Like I said before, I think all teams at the top would probably look at it and go, well, we've not really peaked. We've not really played our best football. We've not really even put together that much of an impressive run, but each of them have kind of had a turn at the top. I know that you have written off Man City this season.
Yeah.
And I know that you've been a bit of a, you know, you think Arsenal probably stand a big chance. Where do you stand now this past couple of weeks?
I haven't really changed too much, really. I still think that Man City are going to come up short. I know they came back in the end against Everton, but again, went 1-0 down in the game. Again, it's not really something you see from them very often in the park. They would normally take control of that game, then just kill it off second half, maybe get another goal, 2-0, 3-0. They're constantly chasing games at the minute, going 1-0 down. It's so unlike them. And something just doesn't look right there. I don't know what it is. The balance isn't right. They've got a lot of players injured, obviously, as well, which isn't helping. But I think even a lot of their fans are saying it's probably not our year. We're not playing the best football we normally play. Obviously, they're still up there, so they could do it. But I think it's between Arsenal and Liverpool. And I obviously backed Arsenal to win it for the season. But I'm going more towards Liverpool the more I'm seeing at the minute. And that Arsenal game the other night, it just kind of reinforced the point everyone's making about the lack of firepower and attack, whether they address that in January could change things in terms of their chances. I mean, Ivan Toney, someone that's been mentioned, but
that's incredible, isn't it? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've seen that a lot. Ivan Toney, a guy who's not played for what, 8 months now.
Yeah,
I know. Look,
he's a really good player.
20 goals last season, and I think he is the sort of forward that they need. But I still think it's a huge gamble because they'd have to spend big money on him as well to prize him from Brentford in January. So, I mean, that's a gamble, though, isn't it? I probably shouldn't use that word.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with that, but I think it would be a really good signing if they did get him. In terms of how fit he would be and sharp for Arsenal, we don't know. I imagine he'd be training all the time while he's not been playing, but obviously it's different to actually being in the games. Solanke's another one that's been mentioned a little bit.
Looks great, doesn't
yeah.
it? I mean, so Solanke's one of those players that when he was at Liverpool, I thought you could tell he had ability. He was quite good on either foot, quick, but I just didn't think he'd ever put it fully together. And when Liverpool got, what, 19 million for him from Bournemouth, you were like, God, Michael Edwards. That was the time when Michael Edwards seemed to, you know, he could sell anything, couldn't he, for a big fee. But you're seeing now that's why I suppose Liverpool rated him so highly. But yeah, again, I think he'd be a good signing for Arsenal.
Yeah, and if they get someone like that, obviously it changes things a little bit because Jesus has never really been that clinical striker in front of goal. He was great at City in terms of linking up with the other forwards, and then Aguero or Sterling, someone else would score the goals, but he was never really that 20 goal a season striker. He's never been that, and I think Arsenal fans were thinking that he was going to be that for them, and he's not. So they haven't really got a great goal scorer, so that could be the only thing that holds them back, along with the goalkeeper. I think those are the two areas of concern for them.
Yeah, I still think the way I see this title race, I still think you're mad to write off Man City. I mean, we've seen so many times, whether it's 6 points, 7 points, that they come back from and they just put together a stupid run in the second half of the season where they go and win an incredible amount of games in a row. So I will never write them off. And I think with De Bruyne coming back, Haaland, you know, he's had fitness problems, but he generally doesn't miss a great deal of games, or certainly didn't last season. So with those sorts of things to fall into place for them, I just think City will go on a run. They always do. I don't think there's no evidence to suggest they won't. There's more evidence to suggest that they will, but go on.
But the thing you're saying about Toney, De Bruyne's not played for months, so he's not going to be sharp when he comes back either.
But he already knows the Man City system. We already know how good he is. And with respect to Ivan Toney, I think De Bruyne's one of the best. You know, you could probably put him in when he's playing the top five footballers on the planet. You know, I think that Man City are the biggest hurdle either Arsenal or Liverpool have got to overcome. You know, the great thing for Liverpool is they'll have Man City to play at home.
Yeah.
And I think that's massive. Arsenal have to go to the Etihad, and that's why I think Liverpool at home, when Anfield knows how important it will be, could be huge in this title race.
The last few times it's been Liverpool going to City around April time, around when the title's still on the line, and that's never a good position to be in. So that could be a big difference, like you're saying.
Yeah, Arsenal have really impressed me. You know, I think they added the players that they needed in the summer. I love Declan Rice. I think I'm very jealous of him. I think he'd be an incredible player for Liverpool, exactly what they need. A leader, he's strong, he covers the ground well, he's a good passer, he can drive forward, good tackler, can play at centre-half. You know, there's so many great things to like about Declan Rice. Saliba, I thought in the Liverpool game, Saliba was absolutely superb. And I haven't watched Saliba that closely, so that was the first time I really thought, you know, I'll keep an eye on him, and I thought it was brilliant. And I love Saka and Odegaard. I think are great players, and they've impressed me with a bit more steel at times this season. But I still think Arsenal have got. I think Liverpool's advantage over Arsenal is that Arsenal will have that grain of doubt that Liverpool had for years trying to win a title again, which was like, you know, can we actually do this? Can we actually stay in the race for long enough? Can we overcome it? And I think 2018-19, when they won the Champions League and came back against Barcelona, the magic of that plus the consistency that they showed in the league showed them and convinced them that they could. I'm not sure Arsenal have had that moment where that's convinced them yet that they're good enough to last the distance. I think, if anything, last season may have given them some doubts. And the way that we react now with football, if someone goes 3 points ahead, we tell them that they've bottled it if they lose the title. I don't think Arsenal bottled it last season, but I think they're all psychological things that will have a bearing. Man City, obviously, we know what they can do, but Liverpool have got a balance of players who've won it before, the likes of Salah and Van Dijk, Alisson, Trent, Robertson. I think all of those players could be hugely influential because they know how to go the distance. And then they've also got a little bit of what Arsenal have got, in the sense they've got those younger, hungrier players like a Nunes, whose brand of chaos can sometimes frustrate, but also the enthusiasm to go out and win things, to take chances, I think is really important. So they've got a good blend there, and that could carry them through. But I think this next month is going to be huge with the African Cup of Nations and the Asia Cup and just some tricky fixtures. The League Cup semi-finals, of course. Paul Hexham on Facebook, thanks again, Paul, for the question and for listening, has asked, is Nunes better off coming off the bench due to his pace and he preferred to see Jota given a run of games, which I would probably agree with now if Salah wasn't going to the African Cup of Nations. I definitely think Nunes needs to be taken out the firing line.
Yeah.
If Jota was fit, he would have been. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I think so. I think the problem Liverpool didn't have was just not having Jota available. Otherwise, I think Nunez would have been dropped because he just looked so ineffective the last sort of month or so up front.
And Gakpo's not really been a great alternative at times, has he, either?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's a bit more... links up the play a bit better than Nunez. Yeah. I think he just becomes a bit isolated and if it's not going well, he kind of sticks out as someone who's not really getting involved, whereas Gakpo can come a bit deeper and link up with the midfield. And I just think he's more intelligent player than Nunez in terms of what he's able to do. So, yeah, I think we'll see Jota starting pretty much every game now, hopefully. And then it will just be a case of, well, Diaz, Gakpo, Nunez in terms of who goes where.
Yeah, John McEnany on YouTube has said that we need to get bodies back, absolutely, and the front three need to step up in the absence of Mo, and that's exactly it, isn't it? I mean, Diaz, I think this season, has been a bit hot and cold, and I think we need to see him start scoring a few more goals. And I was stunned of reading Doyle's piece the other day about Diaz, that was only his second assist, I think, of the season the other day against Burnley for Jota. So that's just not, I don't think that's enough. I think you need, and Liverpool in the past, all three players have contributed with a great amount of goals or assists. So I think you need more from Diaz. And I think Diaz kind of gets away with it a little bit because of Nunez's sort of madness and ability to hog the headlines. I think Diaz has sort of, obviously he's had a very difficult season on and off the pitch, but I think we'd like to see more of him. And obviously Jota stepping up now, he's fifth. Which brings us on really to January. Alison Williams on Facebook says a Winger should be priority in January with Salah leaving for AFCON and potentially permanently next summer. And funny enough, Alison, I think that's the sort of signing that wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool made. I think everyone's looking at centre-back. Everyone's looking still at defensive midfield. But if we know anything about Liverpool, it's kind of to expect the unexpected. And I think in January, they jump on things that they see a chance to do. And it wouldn't surprise me if they've had a winger in mind for 18 months or so and they see a chance to buy them and go and do it. I've got a feeling, Tom, that we'll come out of this window and they'll have bought somebody. It just might not be enough to really make a great difference.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do and also what Man City... I actually think they're going to do some business in January, because we've seen it before with City. If they want a player, they'll just go and buy it. It doesn't matter what the price is. So Pep's probably looking at his team right now, thinking, I'm not happy with this. Calvin Phillips is going in January. So that's one less option from them, from the bench.
That was classic Man City. I mean, like, Liverpool spend 60 million lendo and they persevere. Man City spend 50 odd million on a promising young England midfielder and he barely plays a game, gets called fat by his manager and chucked to one side. And you know, you look at the clubs, he's being linked with some big clubs as well, isn't he? So I'm fascinated to see Calvin Phillips, whether he goes on and makes something of himself. Hopefully this spell at City doesn't destroy him, but you do look at him and wonder, if Liverpool had got their hands on him, could he have been a completely different player?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, so I think they're going to probably sign a couple of players, I think. So that's a worry, and because they're usually pretty spot on with who they sign. And Arsenal, yeah, again, the same thing. I can see them bringing in at least one, two big names, because I just think they'll see this as a big chance to push on and try and win the league. And Arteta's comments the other day, yeah, he even said that they're willing to spend. So I think Liverpool need to be a bit careful of not getting left behind, in terms of you don't need to go out and sign four players or five players for 50 million each, but one player could make a big difference. Doesn't really matter which position. Just a bit more depth in any position would be helpful at this point of the season, because we know there's going to be more injuries along the way. There always seems to be. So, yeah, I don't think it can harm to have another player coming in.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think whenever you look at the times Liverpool have kicked on the second half of the season, last year, Gakpo, you know, and he made a difference. He scored, what, seven goals in the second half of the season and just sort of gave Liverpool a bit of a bump. Van Dijk was massive, wasn't he, when he came in and kicked them on. Obviously, the years ago when they had Sturridge and Coutinho, Coutinho in the same window. Even Minamino, you know, yeah, in the title winning season, they signed Minamino and it sort of pushed them on. You know, I think those sort of signings that supplement or just fill little gaps make a big difference. And Liverpool this year have a couple of obvious big gaps. And I think there's this weirdness about Klopp where he is very stubborn. If someone asks him in a press conference about transfers, he's almost like offended. Why do you always think about transfers? And I think, well, because the evidence is there to show that transfers, when you get them right, and Liverpool, to be fair to them, quite often get them right. You know, the ones they get wrong are the ones they don't make. So like, I think for Liverpool, it's you know, for Klopp, he shouldn't be so concerned about. No one's knocking anyone else in the squad. No one's saying that your other centre halves are rubbish, you need a centre half. People are just saying you're a bit light, and Konate is a great player but gets injured a lot. Matip has been a brilliant servant but is currently injured and was coming to the end of his deal. I think in midfield, Endo could be a great signing for 18 months, 2 years, but we know that he's not going to play for Liverpool for the next 6-7 years. So why are we not thinking about those things, and why is it not a natural thing to ask? So I think with Liverpool, I wish they were a little bit more aggressive, and I really hope that we don't look back at this January as a missed opportunity. Because like you say, I was reading Arteta's quotes the other day about the January window, and he seemed quite bullish about them wanting to sign people. You know, we know that Man City do, and Pep doesn't seem to have the same stigma around signing people. No. He seems to be able to coach and go, you know what, I'll still sign players. And then, you know, obviously, I said to you before in the office, I find it hilarious that a club like Chelsea, Pochettino's talking about signing players when that, you know, and I know he's still new to the job, but God, they've signed that many players in the last 2-3 years. Surely he should be doing the opposite. He should be getting on the coaching, on the field, and coaching his players and making them better. But yeah, I think Liverpool, I just really would like them to be aggressive in this window and just try and get one signing in those areas. You know, a centre-back would fill me with much more confidence if they could get one in, because, you know, with the left-back situation, with Konate's injury record, I really like Quansah. I think he's a really good young player, but I don't necessarily think that you completely kill his progress if you go out and buy someone. I think, if anything, you give him an extra challenge to step up to. You give all of them an extra challenge, and that, you know, he'll sink or swim, won't he? And if he swims, then great. You know, then, you know, you moved Matip on, you moved Konate on. That's football. It's dog eat dog at times. But I think Liverpool should be a little bit more aggressive. Moving on from January, Tom, a couple of things left to discuss. We'll start with VAR. Just because I thought we had an interesting conversation in the office earlier. Would you get rid of it? Would you keep it? Would you make it better?
Get rid of it. Yeah, me too. I really don't like it. Yeah. I think it's just ruined a lot of things in terms of not being able to celebrate a goal, even something like that. Everyone's constantly, is it a goal? Every we see a player score, and the first thing you do now is have a look back at the linesman. Or
saying that is the one successful bit about VAR, isn't it? I know, take the Diaz Tottenham thing out of it, but by and large, even if it's frustrating to see someone be offside by their elbow, at the same time, that is the bit where you can't really argue with it as much. Sorry.
Well, I don't know.
It's not as fun.
But no, it just takes all the fun out of it. Yeah. I just if someone's offside by the fingertip or their elbow, just give it as goal. It doesn't need to.
Not
why do we
advantage? Are you?
Why does it need to be perfect on every decision? Like, that's what it was brought in for, to, you know, to make the right decision. But now we're being so precise about
the
everything.
The problem with offside is they can't not be precise. Can't they? Can't go, well, that's only his fingertip, but we'll give the next one because it's his knee. You know, I think they have to literally draw a line somewhere. But I agree. It doesn't. It's not fun, is it? It's not fun to go, you know, you've just scored a great goal, and but everyone stopped because yeah, it's his toe or whatever. But I mean, the refereeing thing. I mean, I've never seen a season in history more than this one that almost fans of every club think there is some sort of agenda or conspiracy against their own football team. And that, you know, again, is something that people have long thought, you know, Liverpool fans thought in the 90s that Man United got every decision. But now you look at it and, like, Arsenal fans are there the other night because the West Ham goal, given it, you know, we don't get any decisions. Man City, we don't get any decisions. Liverpool, we don't get any decisions. It's, you know, Everton don't get any decisions. It's every club, and it's just amplified by this VAR nonsense where we watch everything over and over again, and we all say, well, that's obvious, that should have been a penalty, that shouldn't have been a penalty. The Everton one against Man City the other night, you know, I think you'd be screaming for it if your team, you know, had that shot. But I think the flip side of it is, if it's against you, yeah, you're saying, how can he get his hands out the way? It's just a nonsense, and it's so, so frustrating. And also, you know, I don't think it's good for the league. I don't think it's good for the Premier League when they're constantly getting told they're corrupt. You know, it's just not good. It's not a good look. It's not a good feeling. It's just terrible. Tom, anything to add?
I mean, I would get rid of it. They're not going to get rid of it because they've invested all the money in the technology for it, but I'm not a fan at all. I think football's, I don't enjoy watching it as much as before, I would say, in terms of before VAR. It just becomes tiring, like watching a game with all this stop start, check this, check that. And then it's, again, the fine margins of being offside by the toe. And I just think it's, yeah, I'm not a fan. I would get rid of it, but that's not going to happen. Yeah. So
Paul Hexman has completed the hat-trick, left foot, right foot, header, and got in with VAR, isn't broken. It's the idiots. People are in charge of it. Look, Paul, I know that a lot of people in the comments won't agree with me, but I don't necessarily think it is the idiots are in charge of it. I just think anyone would struggle to. It is the most difficult and most. I don't know anyone who wants, well, Matt Addison, but anyone else who'd want to be a referee. I just think you will never, ever win. And it is just, it's a terrible system that it's letting everyone down. It's letting the people who run it down, because I don't think they can do it well enough, because we're asking for something that isn't an exact science to be an exact science. And I think we've moved too far away with that from technology. And we're going to wrap it up shortly, Tom. But before we do, really quickly, because we should pick a team really for the Newcastle game, shouldn't we? So we'll do that, and we'll do our team of the year maybe on the next pod. I think that's one we can do in the new year. But go on, let's pick a team quickly for Newcastle. Alisson in goal.
Yeah.
Who's your back four?
Well, I guess it's going to be Gomez, left back.
Has to be
probably Van Dijk, Quansah, or Kanate.
Credit to Quansah, by the way, for making that question.
Yeah,
you know, that's fair play to lad. Yeah. I thought he was excellent at Burnley the other night.
I can imagine it'll be Kanate, yeah, just because of the rotation, and then Trent, obviously.
Yeah, I think probably Kanate just shades it, doesn't he, with the experience. But great. It's
a bit
great
of a tough physical game against Newcastle, yeah, so it's probably better to have him in.
Yeah, it's exactly, yeah. Midfield three, I'm going to go first this time. Endo, Szoboszlai. Do you throw McAllister straight back in? I don't know, because we're going to need him a lot with Endo going off the Asia Cup. So I'll probably put Jones in there, your favourite.
I'm going to put McAllister back in. I think he'll, the fact that he's been training, I think he's probably better than Klopp's letting on.
Yeah.
So I think McAllister, Szoboszlai and Endo for the midfield.
Yeah. Actually quite excited to see that midfield. What now, I suppose McAllister coming back from injury, but now Endo's completely up to speed. And Ian McCartney's asking what the title twist is. It was West Ham. I mean, it's quite a lot of twists recently. Arsenal dropping points, Liverpool not winning either of those games. I mean, I think maybe I'm wrong. I think this is quite an exciting title race, Ian. But thanks for asking. Watch the start of the pod. like watching the end of The Sixth Sense. Where are we up to? Our midfield. Quite excited to see that midfield in action. So Szoboszlai, McAllister, and Endo. Now they're up to speed. It's just a shame that Endo's going off. Who's your forward line?
Salah's going to get one last game before he goes. Yeah. So he's going to start.
Definitely, yeah.
Jota.
Yeah.
Start him. And Gakpo.
Yeah. I think I agree. And Nunes had such an influence, didn't he, off the bench against Newcastle. I'm sure if you get into 70th minute and you need a goal. He's apologised. Sorry, Ian. Didn't mean to. He's apologised for joining late. Didn't mean to put you on the spot there. But no, thanks for listening and thanks for asking a question. I think Nunes with his influence in the previous game. I just think, imagine if you're Newcastle and he's coming off the bench, and you know, if the game is 0-0 or 1-1 or whatever in the 70th minute, you probably wouldn't like to see him. So yeah, I agree. And Gakpo, I think, is just playing himself into a bit of form, so I'd like to keep him in there. So yeah, prediction.
Well, Newcastle are not doing very well at the minute. They've got a lot of injuries. I think Liverpool have won the last five games between the teams. I think I'm going to say 3-0.
3-0, I'll say 2-0. I think and hope Liverpool will just have a bit too much for Newcastle. I think they will have a little fight, Newcastle, because they are, like you say, they're under a lot of pressure at the moment. They've struggled. I just think Liverpool got too much for them. And yeah, that will mean they'll go back top of the table, won't it? I'm assuming Arsenal win at Fulham, but yeah, it's frustrating that Arsenal get to play first and they play on Sunday. But yeah, hopefully Liverpool do win on Monday, go back top of the table. We'll leave it there. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure what day, because New Year's Day is Monday, so maybe Tuesday. And to discuss that game, to look ahead to a very, very busy January and to talk transfers. And yeah, I think we will try and do our team of the year as well and our player of the year. But thanks for joining in. Thanks for everyone that sent in questions. We'll try and do more Q&A pods like this. I think it's quite fun to get people involved. And thanks for hanging on this week. I'm sorry for the delay on the pods. It's a bit of a time of change here at the Echo and at Reach. So hopefully we can get through it. And we do appreciate all your support. Hope you had a great Christmas with your families and your friends. And thanks very much. And see you in 2024.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.